This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news, they're taxing Granny. We also have big ballot props and a new candidate for speaker. We'll interview taxpayer champion Jonathan Stickland on what taxpayers can do to get a better government. And we'll close with a commentary from Ross Kesick. Welcome back to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. We'll get started this week with this week's news. We have Carrie Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Carrie, wanted to talk to you about something that'll be on people's ballots as we're getting into early voting, headed towards Election Day. Something that's, other than candidates, that's on people's ballots that they may take some interest in. Tell us about it.
Right, Tony. These are very interesting. These are ballot propositions put on the ballot by the Republican Party of Texas, asking primary voters their opinion on these issues. These are non-binding, they're not constitutional amendments, but they're something that could give legislators a big amount of headwind coming into the next session, showing them what issues that voters want them to solve and the intensity of how much they want them to solve those problems.
Yeah, you know, in my district, there's not really a hot race that I'm really excited about going to vote. And there's some statewide stuff I'm interested in, but, you know, there's no local race that's exciting. But I'm excited about these. You know, it's an exciting opportunity. There's 11 of these ballot propositions, ranging from abortion to property rights, to property taxes, to these things. Tell us about some of the highlights of them.
Sure, Tony. So one of the ones that I find the most interesting is Proposition 4, which says Republicans in the Texas House should select the speaker nominee by secret ballot in a binding caucus without Democrat interference. This, of course, is a you know, kind of a bone thrown to what efforts have already been going on in the Texas House, thanks to the Freedom Caucus having the House Republican Caucus amend its rules to accept a nominee inside the caucus rather than allowing the Democrats to interfere with the process. This could lead to a much more conservative speaker, and it could remove the ability for a liberal Republican to do what House Speaker Joe Strauss did, which is partner with the Democrats to form a coalition government.
Yeah, I think you know, this will be an interesting one to see whether we have widespread support amongst Republican primary voters for this concept. And then, you know, those who say, well, I don't really want to follow that process, I'd like to go and, you know, build a new coalition with the Democrats. They're going to look pretty bad if, you know, 80-90% of Republican voters are saying this is something we want to see happen. Tell us about some of the other ones that are in the propositions.
Well, Tony, the interesting thing is a lot of these are all about issues that have already been in the platform but failed to pass in the last legislative session. One of those is property tax reform. You look at Proposition 10, which reads, to slow the growth of property taxes, yearly revenue increases should be capped at 4%. With increases in excess of 4% requiring voter approval. This is something that conservatives really rallied around in the Texas legislature. Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and the Texas Senate really pushed the measure through the legislature, but it failed in the Texas House, killed by Joe Strauss, just saying that voters should be able to approve tax increases if they go above a certain level.
Yeah, just voters should have a say. Another proposition there on property taxes about phasing property taxes out entirely. So even a more bold statement that's available to voters. Where can listeners learn more about all of these propositions and the analysis you put together?
Great question, Tony. So if listeners will go to empowertexans.com/endorsements, they'll see not only the candidates that we've selected to endorse for this Republican primary, but text of the resolution and how we're recommending voters vote on them. The easy thing is we're recommending that you pass them all. So if you just remember to vote yes at the polls, that'll do well for us.
Okay. Well, thank you for that analysis, Gary.
Thanks to be here, Tony.
Next, I wanted to talk to Sal Ayala, budget and policy analyst with Empower Texans, about the granny tax. This is an issue that's popping up in Republican primaries around the state. Some Republicans voted for the granny tax during the last legislative session. Their opponents are certainly making an issue of that. Tell us about it. You wrote about what this is, the granny tax. Tell us about what the granny tax is.
Yeah, sure, Tony. So the granny tax is often referred to as the nursing facility reinvestment allowance. But essentially what it is an increase of about 6% on nursing home facility beds. And like I said, it's an increase in costs. And what happens is they take those funds and they draw down federal matching funds with it. which are then remitted to a private institution known as a nursing facility agent corporation, which then distributes them back to...
So this is an industry group kind of spun up that would handle these funds being collected by order of the state, and they kind of come up in this big pot and then redistributed back out to the facilities.
Right. And so one of the issues that comes up with this is that a lot of nursing facilities, especially if they have primarily private pay residents, would be paying more into the scheme. But the problem with that is there's no guarantees that they're going to be made whole by this nonprofit, this unaccountable private entity run by industry insiders.
Yeah, and so this was something that was being pushed during the last legislative session, been pushed in previous legislatures before, defeated every session, but got all the support of all of the Democrats. Some of the Republicans voted for it. Some of the Republicans voted against it. But it was a little bit political hotbed. It's called the granny tax. You know, where did this term granny tax come from?
Yeah, so again, this is a measure that's been proposed in the legislature for many several sessions in a row now. Most recently, I think it was defeated by former Governor Perry. And really, it's essentially a blowback from a lot of these nursing home facilities that service private pay patients that recognize that there's a very likely chance that they're not going to recover the funds that they pay into it. And so they're the ones that initially kind of labeled it the granny tax.
Okay. So what about the opposition? Some of the proponents of this bill say, oh, look, now we can't charge granny. So it's not a tax, not a granny tax. We can't charge granny. There's some loopholes to that. I think TPPF covered that. Tell me about that.
That's all right, Tony. So in my research, I was looking for a different analysis of the bill, and one of them came from the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and it was written by one Dr. Dean Waldman, who is basically the former chief of pediatric cardiology at the University of Chicago. And in his analysis, he says, in fact, that, and I quote, there are loopholes in the wording of HB 2766 that could allow facilities to pass on the cost of the tax to residents. Many would be forced to do so to keep their doors open.
Specifically the private pay people. Well, anyway, it's an interesting issue popping up. I'd encourage listeners, go check out Sal's article up at EmpowerTexans.com. A lot of good analysis getting into the depths of it, of what this issue, the granny tax, is, and some truth about it amongst all of the rhetoric and the campaigns. Thanks for your work, Sal.
Anytime, Tony.
Next, let's turn to Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Brandon, you've got an article up about kind of some breaking news, a new entrant into the race for Texas House Speaker. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so of course, Speaker Joe Strauss announced he was leaving the legislature back in the fall, and now we've got a new entrant into the race. Capitol sources are telling us that State Representative Drew Darby out of San Angelo is going to announce next week that he plans to run for Speaker in the next legislative session.
Yeah, joining and a couple of candidates that are already running?
Yes, already. State Representative Phil King and State Representative John Zerwas have both announced that they also plan to run for Speaker in the next session.
Yeah, so basically, House Speaker Joe Strauss, very liberal Republican from San Antonio, has been in office for 10 years now and has consistently obstructed conservative reforms in the House. We've got a couple of his lieutenants running for Speaker. Zerwas already in, and now Darby getting into the race, and have a you know, another chair of his, Phil King, is a little more conservative, running a little more to the right of him. Let's talk a little bit about Darby, though. Who is State Rep Drew Darby?
Yeah, so Darby, very much in the same obstructionist mold as Speaker Strauss. He's been a chair under the Speaker. He's been chair of Energy Resources. Has consistently received failing grades on the Fiscal Responsibility Index, earning a 40 in the most recent legislative session.
What are some of the votes that, you know, he took that earned him a 40 on the index?
Well, just obstructing property tax reform in the House, he voted to kill a state spending limit bill.
Yeah, so some major conservative priorities came up, and he said, "Nah, I don't want to do this stuff."
Right.
Kind of interesting element that we talked about, or that you talked about in your article, he's been spreading some money around in the primary. It's kind of interesting to follow.
Yes, and so we've talked about the last few weeks about campaign finance reports on the show, and something we kind of noticed and took interest in is his campaign during the last month has been giving money in $1,000 increments to a number of establishment lawmakers.
Yeah, and so these are some of the state reps who are being challenged from the right, particularly handful of candidates that are being opposed by candidates endorsed by Governor Abbott.
Yes, Wayne Faircloth, Lyle Larson, endorsed against by Abbott.
Yeah, and Darby's given money to them. He's also given money to other candidates being challenged from the right in the primary.
Yes, people like Dan Flynn, who's being challenged by Brian Slayton.
Yeah, so part of the theory here on this, and it's interesting to note that Drew Darby, one of the Republican candidates out there who's refused to sign the pledge from the Republican Party of Texas that he will support a Republican caucus nominee for Speaker, so kind of leaving open this possibility of combining votes with the Democrats. Is this a sign that he's trying to kind of spread the money around, build a Republican group that would join with him and the Democrats to be elected Speaker?
It appears that way. Strauss, of course, came into power by having Democrat votes and a minority of Republicans. Looks like Darby might be trying to replicate that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I appreciate your coverage of this. Well, something we'll have to keep an eye on. I think we'll see more entrants get in the race in the coming weeks, but it'll be very interesting to see whether Representative Darby gains traction.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks for that report, Brandon.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome on Texas Scorecard Radio this week State Representative Jonathan Stickland, a force for liberty in the Texas House of Representatives. Representative Stickland, thank you for joining the program this week.
Absolutely. It's fun to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. You know, there's been a little bit of coverage. This is your first election since you were initially elected to the state house several terms ago where you haven't had a challenger, and that has freed you, unlike most reps who maybe would go on vacation or just sit at home or whatever they would do or work or whatever, you know, these things. You've been out working on the campaign trail for liberty, actually helping other conservative candidates. Tell us about some of the things you're seeing, the things you're doing.
Well, I feel a little bit bad because I told my wife, you know, for years, baby, if we can just have no primary opponent, our life will get much easier. And then, you know, we decided to jump in full force. Listen, the truth is, Tony, we got 150 state reps in the state of Texas. Republicans are supposed to have almost a super majority of the Texas House, yet we still have all these unfinished things like property tax reform and relief, pro-life agenda, Second Amendment, all these things where we're lacking. And it's very clear to me it's because we've got Republicans who run for office, but they're really Democrats. And so I felt it was my responsibility as someone who has served in the Texas House the last three sessions to get out to the voters and really name names. We kind of have this idea that there's these rhinos or Republicans in name only, but sometimes it's hard to see the difference between them. And so I felt a responsibility to the people of Texas and the future of Texas to get in there and start naming some names. So you're right. We've been running around the state recruiting solid conservatives who respect the Constitution and want to obey it, and try to get them in a position where they can get their message of limited government out to the people. And it's been a lot of fun. We've been traveling the state, helping raise money, help bring awareness, doing some endorsements and, you know, coaching and whatnot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm really pleased with where we're at as a movement right now.
Yeah. So, you know, you ran for office back in 2012 and your initial run. And I mean, Texans, you know, out there, you know, as evidenced by the Trump phenomenon with Trump's election, Texans recognize that there's this swamp in D.C. They understand that there's special interests who dominate the place, that citizens yep. don't have enough say, and there's certainly not enough accountability. But were you surprised to see that same dynamic play out in Austin, in Texas? I mean, we have this reputation of being a conservative state that's doing a lot of things right, and to some yep. extent that's true. But were you surprised to see that same dynamic play out here in this state?
Shocked and disappointed, to be honest with you. I had never been to Austin before I won the first race. And I like to joke that I was tricked into running, which is actually more true than not. And, you know, I got down there, and having knocked on thousands of doors and talking to folks, you know, on their porches, you realize very quickly, Texans, it's almost ingrained in our souls that we want to be left alone. We want to take care of ourselves, our family, our neighbors. We don't need government to hold our hand and to do everything for us. So I just assumed that that was the same across the state, but it's not in Austin. I mean, there are so many people who campaign as conservatives, but they have no intention of actually legislating that way. It took me about 3 days in my first session to realize, kind of a funny deal, I'll tell you real quick.
Sure.
There was the rule fight my freshman year, which was a couple of days after we were sworn in and took our oath of office. And I had a simple idea, which was, if you file a bill, then on that bill, when you file it, we need you to cite the part of the Texas Constitution that authorizes you to do what you're asking to do.
Seems like a common sense sort of thing.
Yeah, just cite the Constitution that gives government the authority to do what you want to do. And everybody went ballistic, Tony. And it was at that moment I'm like, guys, this is not a major thing. This should be real easy. And you would have thought that I wanted to, you know, sell the University of Texas, which, you know, maybe a good idea. I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, it was a small thing. And it turned into this big deal. And ever since then, you know, it's been very clear to me there is a huge disconnect between the politicians in the Capitol and the people back at home.
Well, you mentioned naming names and things that are going on this campaign cycle. Let's talk a little bit about that. Can we talk a little bit about some of the candidates who are some of your colleagues in the House who are having tough reelection challenges from conservatives, from the right, where you've gone out and said, hey, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and tell the truth what's happening here.
Yeah, the easiest one is down in Harris County, Representative Sarah Davis, who's been there since before I was. And I'm not kidding you, this woman literally votes with the most liberal Democrat in the Texas House more than she votes with me, her Republican colleague. She is endorsed by Planned Parenthood. She votes against every pro-life measure that has ever hit the floor. She's anti-Second Amendment. She is horrible on fiscal issues. And, I mean, this woman is everything that we fight against, yet every 2 years, an election cycle, she's the second coming of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, it's your conservative voice in Austin is on the campaign materials.
And it's a joke in Austin when we're, you know, with 150 members, when we're all on the floor, she's over here caucusing with the Democrats and helping them strategize and literally knifing the Republican caucus in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I mean, I've seen this play out over hundreds of different issues over the last 6 years.
So she's
a prime example. So I've been helping. She's got a great challenger against her, Susanna Docupil, who is a strong Christian conservative who believes in the notion of liberty, that's not afraid of it, and will actually respect and has read the Republican Party platform.
Yeah. So what are you doing as a rep to point this out? What are you actually able to do to actually impact that election?
So a number of different things. I've been posting through my social media outlets about, you know, bad bills and bad reps and endorsing some of these people.
Oh, yeah. Bad bill of the week, right?
bad bill of the week was a big hit that we're going to keep on going next session, trying to educate the voters. You know, had a big thing to do with the Shark Tank event that we held up in North Texas, where we brought together grassroots donors from around the state, all got together in one room, and we brought a lot of these conservative challengers up there, grilled them on the issues, grilled them about their campaign and what their plan was, and gave the donors in the room the opportunity to write a financial contribution right there to these people at the start of their campaign. So for us, it's really been about, you know, recruiting the right people with a proven conservative record and credentials, getting them in front of the right people, getting the grassroots organized behind them. You know, I've been lucky enough to have donors and supporters and volunteers from all over the state, so I've been trying to plug them in
sure.
to their local guys that are running. helping them raise money. We've done some campaign events for folks.
Now what kind of pushback have you gotten? Now, obviously you're out there doing these things, and Davis is kind of the poster child for a bad Republican, sure. But there are other candidates.
I can name some other ones.
Yeah, there are other names. I think we'd spend a whole program if we went through the list. But right. But what is some of the pushback? You know, you think of the Capitol, and it's got this reputation of being a very clubbish atmosphere. It's this idea, oh well, we're all kind of above this politics thing, and that's something we might have had to do to get elected. But once we're in, we really shouldn't, you know, fight against each other because we're all part of this. We're all members in this club. Obviously, going out and endorsing and campaigning against bad incumbents like you have has to not go over well with some of your colleagues. Tell us what the reaction has been.
Well, it's different. I've been doing it and slowly kind of amping this up over the last couple of years. The good news for us is I get to go out there and tell the truth. So there's really not much they can say other than just not liking it personally.
Right.
And there certainly is retribution. I mean, Joe Strauss and his team have been dealing that out to conservatives for years now, and punishing us and every Texan in the state by killing conservative legislation out of spite if sure. anybody, you know, like me goes near it. But I think the secret is that, you know, there's some guys that like to tinker around the edges and, you know, they're fighting back, but they're not bold about it. We just decided to go big or go home. Like, we're just going to own it. I am not interested in making friends in the Capitol. I want to work with my colleagues, but I want them to just do the right thing. I don't need their friendship. I'm happy to have it if I can get it, but I'm far more concerned with having to come back to my district, sit in my Sunday school class, go to the grocery store, and be able to look these people in the eye and tell them the truth. So it's really a decision that every individual who's in politics has to make. Where do you want to be popular? Because the people back at home are at odds with the special interests and the lobbyists in Austin.
Well,
they cannot go together. So you have to pick a team.
Yeah.
And for me, I've just picked, I'd rather come home to a happy crowd and applause than to be the cool guy in the Capitol.
Now, real quickly, tell us, you know, tell voters, obviously you're able to play the role that you're able to play as a representative, but what role can citizens play? What can they be doing beyond just going to the polls and voting? What can they be doing right now to help elect conservative candidates?
So people need to understand the mindset of a politician, and most people understand if I'm not reelected, there's not much I can do. So there are some people down there who have been elected who frankly believe in the right things. They're just afraid to step out there and do it. And one of the reasons that I've been able to get out there and fight and help lead the charge and do these things that are outside the norm is because I've got an army of people back at home who have proven that they will back me up and have my back and show up when it's time. If you want your representative or your senator to go up there and unapologetically stand, then you have to show them that they are not going to be alone. That is the secret and the quote-unquote political power of Jonathan Stickland. It's not me as an individual. It's the thousands of grassroots activists behind me that brings fear to the table and makes me strong.
Wow, that's cool. That's great.
When activists, when you're looking at helping someone get elected to, say, state representative, you can't just go out there and vote. You have to show them and be there for them. Okay, you have to insulate them from the Austin establishment. I talk about this a lot when I travel around the state, that, you know, this decision that people have to make, be popular at home or be popular in Austin. Make it as comfortable as possible for them to be popular at home if they do the right thing. You need to acknowledge when good behavior happens. When they run out there and boldly push the conservative message, you need to show up. You need to write a check. You need to host a meet and greet at your house. You need to stand at the polls out there for a couple of hours.
Do all of those things that folks can do beyond just going to vote. I think that's all the time I have. Tell listeners where they can learn more about you. Follow you on Facebook and Twitter. Tell us about all of that.
Yes. So Facebook, Jonathan Stickland. It's facebook.com/votejs. My website is jonathanstickland.com, or they can follow us on Twitter at votejs as well. We're out there on all the normal social media deal, and I just encourage people to get out there and be a force that that makes a difference. Show up. You can't just cast your vote. You've got to do more, and then stay on top of people. We're going to get the government that we deserve, and that means we're going to have to go out there and fight to protect this constitutional republic that we have been given.
That's right. That's right. Great advice. Thank you for the work you do. Thank you for coming on the program and sharing a little bit of advice with us this week.
Onward. Thanks, buddy.
In this week's commentary, Ross Kessig argues that when it comes to property taxes, if a liberal newspaper reporter can get it right, so can you.
I'd like to read you an excerpt from an article. Quote, "To all the city and county officials and your paid lobbyists who are blanketing state lawmakers with anti-tax reform complaints, you ought to be ashamed. You're acting piggish in your protest of property tax reform." End quote. While those words sound like something a conservative Republican would write, they weren't. They came from a reporter at the Dallas Morning News named Dave Lieber. With the Texas Scorecard radio commentary, I'm Ross Kessig. Lieber was rightly disgusted at city and county officials in 2017 who hired lobbyists with taxpayer money to fight against taxpayers. But these officials didn't just lobby. Hundreds of officials and bureaucrats descended on Austin to hold press conferences and photo ops opposing property tax reform. But what too many Republican voters may not know is that Republican lawmakers in the Texas House joined Democrats to water down the legislation before killing it. Efforts were made by conservatives to fix the bill and restore it to the version supported by Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and the Texas Senate. But enough Republicans teamed up with all the Democrats to defeat the measure. With 95 House Republicans, getting the 76 votes needed to pass tax reform should have been a cakewalk, but it wasn't. That's because 44 Republicans feared local government officials who opposed the bill more than their constituents who supported it. Sure, these weak-kneed Republicans voted for the watered-down version, but that version would not have protected very many taxpayers. You see, local officials who keep raising your property taxes don't want to be made more accountable. Senate Bill 2 would have required that local officials get voter approval for a tax increase 4% or more. That's it. But that poses a political problem. If local elections are required for tax hikes, it will be much easier for taxpayers to see which officials are raising their taxes. Opposition to the bill was so loud and so obnoxious, Lieber fired back at officials who opposed it. Lieber wrote, quote, "You look greedy. You don't want to be accountable to your taxpayers. If you can't sell your government's need to grow by more than 4% in a November election to your own voters, maybe you have the wrong job." End quote. What kind of world do we live in where the Dallas Morning News' watchdog is more conservative on tax reform than 44 Republican lawmakers? Texans need to stop relying upon campaign rhetoric and start paying attention to how Republican lawmakers are actually governing. We need Texans who are willing to criticize Republicans, who say one thing on the campaign trail and then govern like Democrats. Unlike our founding fathers, Texans don't need to pledge our lives, our fortunes, or our sacred honor. We just need to be more like newspaper reporter Dave Lieber. We need to be willing to speak the truth, even if it means criticizing those in our own party. I'm Ross Kessig with the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's the end of the program. Thanks for listening, and join us back here next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.